She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties. Maybe don't look at my vagina and talk about sperm.
Skinador. Skinador? Skinador.
No.
I'm so sort of proud of you.
I don't know what the point was. We're gonna move on.
I'm astounded that we didn't fuck that up.
With our new friend and author, Amanda Skinador. Hi, Amanda. Welcome to the pod.
Welcome.
Any friend of Addison's, a friend of ours. So
she's amazing. Thank you.
She is. She is. Oh, my God. Well, if she says a book is good, we trust her. She is
we
like.
We take her at her word.
We take her at her word because let me tell you what, that girl knows her research. That girl knows her research.
And I absolutely loved The War Librarian and by Addison Armstrong. If you don't know who Addison is, you're new to the pod or whatever, that's who we're talking about. And
go
I
that episode come back.
Consistently say that I don't like historical fiction. And so when someone writes historical fiction that I like, like, well, if they're going to recommend something else, I'm going to like that too.
Time out. You say you don't like historical fiction. Tell her what your favorite book is of all time.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
And what is it?
It's
what is that book?
Fiction. It's historical fiction.
It's a pretty amazing book. That's fair.
It set the bar very high. although this season, I realized that I do like gothic historical fiction.
Anatomy. Oh, have you read Anatomy, Amanda? It is so good.
It's really good.
It's YA. It's about a young girl who wants to be a female surgeon. And
she wants to be a surgeon, but she's a woman.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, that obviously means because she has a uterus, she is not capable of this, right? Because
clearly.
Because owning a uterus makes us incapable of thinking.
Right.
Which is a common theme in your book, too. yeah, it's a really good one, but it's got a lot of spooky vibes because they're doing grave robbing because this was like in the 1700s and they were trying to, you know,
gotta love a good gotta love a good what are they called? Resurrectionists. That's what they're called. Resurrectionists. Sounds like a fun hobby.
What'd you say, Amanda?
I'll check it out. It sounds good.
Yeah.
It's a duology too. You know, Molly, the fact that you and I made it through that whole episode saying resurrectionist and not saying erectionist is just astounding. I'm astounded that we didn't fuck that up.
I mean, it's like the season I kept saying Master Baker and we never laughed once.
By the way, I forgot to tell you, Molly, I went to a library con, and you know that, but I bought some t-shirts at this con, and the woman who was selling them was asking about our podcast, and she's like, do you guys focus only on one genre? And I said, no, we're genre fluid. And she was like, I want to put that on a t-shirt. And I was like, if you do, you better quote me.
Currently hashtag not sponsored.
Genre fluid.
Because
we are.
Yeah, we are. I mean, I try for us to be genre fluid. I try to shove as many rando books down your throat as I can.
They're not all winners, Molly. They're not all winners.
But
I'm looking at you, Big Swiss.
Okay, all I'm saying is you get a wider reading range and you get a wider prospect. That's not a word. You get a wider view of the world when you read multiple genres.
I am 42 years old. I just want to read Grumpy Sunshine, Slow Burn, Open Door.
Well, we have a podcast that isn't Grumpy Sunshine. Open
okay,
that
fine.
With Katie. Go have Grumpy Sunshine with Katie.
That man makes it sound like Katie and I are going to be like.
But I'm not. And especially since you've referred on previous seasons that we're not a lesbian couple. So that doesn't hurt my feelings at all.
So, yeah. Okay.
Sorry. Right. We're not trying to ignore you, Amanda.
How about we tell you what we're actually going to talk about? This book,
The Medicine Woman of Galveston by Amanda Skinnadonna. How about a bio?
Skinnador.
Skinnador. God damn it. Okay. I said it right.
She's right one out of 10 times.
Right. I said it right before we started filming. 3 times.
Yeah.
I'm so sort of proud of you.
Skinnador. 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 Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So is what background is that? Is that European? Is it German?
No, it's an Oneida name. Oneida, the Native American tribe from Wisconsin. That's where my husband's.
Oh.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. I didn't realize.
It is related to the word Shenandoah. So I think when you mesh the two, maybe it was prophetic.
Yeah. That's funny you say that. I'm from upstate New York where that is like a huge part of the history. The Oneida is huge part of like the area I grew up in. I grew up in Tioga County, New York. And so like the native tribes are a huge part of the history there because Owego is like, what, April?
You No, it's the bugs.
It's the bugs.
There are mosquitoes in my recording space. So if y'all see me looking around, it's because I know that they're trying to join their friends that have already bitten me.
It's my brain goes to Harry Potter and Luna Lovegood going, it's the narwhals. They're everywhere. You know? That's me, though. Like,
I am a little Luna Lovegoody.
Yeah, I can be that way. Just a midge.
Yeah.
Would you like a bio, April?
I would love that for us.
Let's do that. Poor Amanda. I'm so sorry. You really should get a forewarning about this.
Love your vibe.
She's a fan, so she knew what she was in for.
Amanda,
she still agreed to come on.
I know, for realsies. Congratulations. Hurdle one passed. Amanda Skinnadonna is an award-winning author of historical fiction. She practices advanced sciences, guys. Historical fiction and is a registered nurse. Her books have been translated into multiple languages and garnished accolades from the American Library Association, Reader's Digest, Silicon Valley Readers, and Apple Books. That's a big one. That little stamp's a happy stamp.
I like that you think Apple Books is the big one when she won something from ALA.
The Apple Books is money.
Apple ALA, money. ALA is all the librarians being like, approval.
We'll agree to disagree. Mm-hmm. In 2024, she was awarded the Nevada Art Council Literature Fellowship. Holy cow, that's a mouthful. Her writing explores lesser known corners of history and often includes themes of medicine, justice, and belonging. Amanda lives in Las Vegas with her husband and their pet turtle, Lenore. I love that. What kind of turtle?
She's a box turtle.
So she's a little guy then.
Guy, yeah. Mm. Yeah. In a big terrarium.
Nice. So she's a happy home. I love that for her. I know, right? I want to be a box turtle when I come back.
She's very sweet. Hey,
I've moved on from the octopuses, April. Let's just be happy about that.
Sure.
Okay, so our main character is a trailblazer.
Wait, Molly, time out. Amanda needs to give us a synopsis.
And thank you for joining on Book Besties. I've been Molly Biggs. That is April Watkins. Thank you for joining, Amanda. We'll see you guys next time. Bye! Okay, I'm just fast forwarding through everything. Let's try this again. Amanda, could you please give us a synopsis, my friend?
Absolutely. So, The Medicine Woman of Galveston. The year is 1900, and Dr. Tusha Hatherley, the main character, she hasn't touched a stethoscope or scalpel in years, not since a deadly accident in the operating theater left her patient dead. Now, when the story opens, she's deeply in debt and struggling to provide for her disabled son. And so she joins this snake oil salesman, this cunning and charismatic man, and his traveling medicine show. And as their caravan of wagons crisscross Middle America, hawking revivifying rattlesnake oil and miraculous corn-busting cure, Tusha finds herself part of this colorful cast of characters. from the towering Austrian giantess to the bow-legged musician to the indentured Greek poet, the troupe becomes this kind of unexpected family for Tusha and her son, all except Huey, who will do anything to turn a profit, including exploiting Tusha's medical license, and when that's not enough, Tusha herself. Yeah. But just as she kind of gets the courage to break free from Huey Adolphus's grasp, fate intervenes, and she and the troupe are stranded on Galveston Island during the deadliest natural disaster in human history, U.S. history, I should say. And in the wake of this incredible storm, she has to summon all of her courage, her strength, her resilience to rediscover her true calling and help those she loves. That's
good job. The book. That's way better than I would have get. But we, you know, you did write the book. So.
We love a found family here too. We love a found family. We love it. Mm-hmm. That's a favorite trope of the book besties. So
we like tropes here.
It's a favorite trope of mine too.
Yeah, we love a found family. And there's definitely a great, lively cast of characters. And I do not know how you intended Huey to look, but to me, have y'all seen, I want to say Danny DeVito, it was Danny DeVito, but I want to say it was like live action Dumbo. Is that what it was? That is how I kept picturing him.
Like my purple eyes.
Okay. And just like twirling his mustache like I'm going to get all the money.
Okay, you mentioned purple eyes so many times. I hyperfixated on it because ADHD. And did you know most people with purple eyes aren't actually fucking purple? It is blue and silver weeded together so much that from a distance the eye looks purple.
Didn't Elizabeth Taylor have purple eyes?
Yeah, any people that have, and she had blue and silver eyes. So come to find out, to truly have purple eyes, it's like genetic disorders. You have to have albinism. There was like four different things. I'll put my research down there because that's what I do. But it's not truly something you're born with unless you have this genetic disorder. Ooh. Thanks for making me do some science today.
Love that. That's fascinating. Blue and silver.
No, not really. It's unnecessary. look at April's face.
Actually, I was just thinking that you would make a fantastic librarian.
Me?
Mm-hmm.
No more school, thank you. No more school. It took me 10 years to get my bachelor's. No, thank you.
But it'll only take you two to get your master's.
Sure, sure. On top of raising teens, managing a household, and pot.
Yeah.
2 years is no time.
Yeah.
I got this, totally.
If I'm going to go get my PhD, you could totally get a master's.
Ooh. I'm not getting my master's. And we've talked about the PhD. This is not a right now conversation. Not a right now conversation. As Fair. You say, this is an off-pod conversation, Molly.
Fair.
Okay, let's start with questions.
Let's
try this again. Our main character is a trailblazer. Dr. Tusha Hathaway is a doctor, but when we meet her, she is working in a factory and is frightened just by the sight of blood. Mm-hmm. We are being set up for a ride as the readers, who, if there was anyone, inspired Tusha.
Well, so the first draft of the book, and I mentioned this because I think it will be maybe interesting and relevant later on. So I wrote an entire draft of the book where Tusha was not a doctor. She was a huckster like Huey. And that character, Tusha, in that draft was based off of a woman named Violet McNeil, who was a real life snake oil salesman. And she was kind of operating around the turn of the century and wrote a memoir in the, the 30s, I think, about her time. Damn. In that. And so I had read that. I was so fascinated by her and by that. But then, so I'm writing this.
Oh, that was interesting. Story.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really good because she just had all this, like, obviously insider information about what it was like to be. But I'm writing this story and I get to the end of the book and I see, like, it is just like crumbling. And I'm hoping, like, it's going to come together. Mm. So I step back and I'm like,
this isn't working.
Yes. And I need to fix it.
You could have either put it away
yeah.
and start over or fix it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so I kind of did a little both. I mean, I sort of essentially started over and I started thinking about Tusha. I was like, that's, she's just not right for this story. And that, so then I started thinking, well, like, what if she was a woman who wanted to be a doctor? Because like there weren't doctors in 1900 that were women, right? So I started to research that and realized, well, of course there were. There were a couple thousand doctors that were women in the United States, like 6% of all doctors were women. And that's kind of where the new character came out.
Well, that's a higher percentage than I would assume back then.
Yeah, right? It is for me too. Yeah.
It really is. And you know, I just always share this because I think it is so fascinating. So about 6% in 1900, it wasn't until after 1970 that the percentage of female physicians in the United States got above 7%.
Jesus Christ.
So we were a really long time with very, very few women.
You need to be doing these kind of info dumps on the socials. People love this shit.
So, like, I thought it was really interesting that you actually referenced real universities that were not accepting women. And then there was the school. So is that a real medical school that existed at the time?
It was. And a lot of Tusha's experiences in school that you know, you learn about later in the book, those are all drawn from these accounts.
No, I 100% believe that. Like,
oh yeah.
Everything that happened to her, I was like, yep, that seems legit. Cause why? Mm-hmm. Cause men were running the show.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that kind of shit happens.
Everything that happened to Tusha, I was like, yeah, because fucking men. Yeah, like, it's just how...
They're not all like that, though, no, I have to say.
No, all men are not all like that. No, not,
but... And I'm raising two little boys. Well, they're not quite little. They're pretty boys tall. But they're, you know, I'm raising them to be good men, you know, but...
They are. They are...
That's it changes, right? So,
yeah. But historically, men in power...
Took advantage of that power.
Yeah.
So
historically, that's what happened.
As a writer, I'm super interested in names. So I'd love to hear the history of the name Tusha because I've never heard it. It was a new name for me.
Yeah, it was my great grandmother's name, and she was right around the time the Tusha.
That's very sweet. My great grandmother's name was Fanny. So you know, different families. Different families.
Yeah. And I don't think I realized it was so rare. Like I thought,
no one that I met
ever heard. Maybe.
Well, both of us listened to the audiobook. I was doing both reading the physical book and listening to the audiobook.
She was fucking powering through. She's a rock star.
I had to pick up my pace on it a bit. So I could finish for us to, but, we both heard the name and thought, that can't be the right pronunciation.
I thought she was.
We had to go and look to see how it was spelled because we thought the way what we were hearing wasn't necessarily.
You know how like an audiobook will gap sometimes, like just in the recording or whatever. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just like, and I was like, "Am I hearing things?"
Yeah.
Like,
and I read an audiobook.
So I read it and then we were texting about it and I was like, okay, I'm not crazy.
And I've read an audiobook series before. It was a trilogy and the character's name was pronounced differently in the first book than the other two. And it was the same audiobook narrator. So I thought maybe like, you know, I didn't know. So I went and I was like, nope, that is phonetically how that name would be pronounced. And I had never heard that name before. So I was like, Molly, we need to ask her where this name came from. And I kind of love that you use your great grandmother. That's awesome.
I do too.
My great grandmother, who was born around the same time, her name was Rosalind, but she's Hungarian. She was born in Hungary. So it wasn't spelled the way you would expect it to be spelled. So, you know, cause she wasn't American, but, yeah, but I love that. I love that you brought in your family. That's so cool. That's really cool. We interviewed, oh, crap, what's his name?
Anthony Mara.
We interviewed him.
Only man we've interviewed. So that's the only reason I'm here.
Only guy we've interviewed so far.
No, no, I'm sorry. Isaac came on.
He doesn't count. He's not an author. He's a fellow podcaster. But Anthony Mara, when we interviewed him.
Again, another off-pod conversation later, Amanda.
he named three characters in his book that we were talking to him about. They were the names of his great aunts. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because, so cool.
And like, they were like our favorite characters. And we're like, who are these people? And he's like, oh, they're my aunts. I based these people off my aunts. And it was like, that I makes sense that. Because we're like, that's yeah, they have the most.
So did you know great grandma Tusha? Did you know her?
No, I think like my mom barely knew her. I think my mom was like four when she died. So I never met her, but I've seen pictures and there was this sort of like the family that she and her mother were both kind of, they were physicians, but they were kind of intrepid women who really
strong,
lived in very tough times, but made the most of it. So that's why she just always stuck with me.
I love that. You know, if you're going to write a powerful woman, a woman who takes opportunities when they're given and seizes them like Tusha does, you should name her after somebody that did that. You know what I mean? Like I love that you did that. Like I keep harping on it, but I love that you did that. Also, Molly and I go down rabbit holes and talk about our grandmas a lot. So like,
My grandma's name was Arvina. So another weird name. So yeah, Arvina. It's really pretty. I wasn't allowed to name a kid it though. My husband was not having that. That's why Livia's middle name is her middle name, because Matt said no to Arvina. So while we're on Tusha, we would love to hear about your research for the PTSD and trichotillomania. I can't say it, April. You wrote it on here. Trichotillomania? Did I say that right?
Yeah.
We would love to
hear like, about- what did I write?
Are you sure I did it? Aren't you so glad you came on when you're our most professional?
I love it.
We would love to hear about this research and how you decided to include it, because it is like PTSD is very singular in this time, especially for like the kind of life they live in. But for her to have the picking is a very interesting choice. So we'd love to hear about that.
So it wasn't necessarily that I didn't set out to write, like, I want to write a story about a woman with PTSD or I want to write a story about a woman with trichotillomania. But it was sort of, I guess, motivated by a couple of things. One, you know, I needed to get right, like a woman physician who's worked right so hard as you would have had to do, right, as a woman physician to just graduate, to just get that degree. To have someone go from there to this place where she's accepting the proposition of a snake oil salesman, like that has to be this pretty epic fall. It's me thinking
a fall from grace for sure.
Right. Yeah. How does someone get there?
How does she manage the stress and the exhaustion and the way life's beating on her? It's beautiful. It's realistic.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking, I think especially since COVID, this has sort of just been like in the back of my mind floating, nebulously there about the trauma that healthcare professionals experience. And I certainly don't mean to use that word in a lighthearted way, right? But I do think that sometimes we see terrible, heartbreaking, traumatic things. And I also like errors in particular, right? So for Tusha, it was this error that she caused, right? She did this, and that happens. Yeah. I've made but medical errors.
Was it really her, or was she set up?
Both, definitely, she was set up. But I think she also she had this hubris, right? She thought she could do it and didn't stop to think, can I do this? Do I know? You know, am I prepared for this? And And it guts you, you know, like those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, nothing I've done ever has caused like patient harm. But even that, like they stick with me. I can remember these moments so clearly. So I think I've been thinking about that and that.
Yeah.
Your own personal journey really influenced it. There's the word influenced, not inflected.
Yeah. And the trichotillomania, what I liked about how you included that, number one, it's not named in the book. Because I don't think at the time they would have known what that was, but it wasn't started because of her trauma. This is an anxiety disorder that she had had for much longer. It had been majority of her life. Mm-hmm. I actually had a roommate in college that had it. And she had no eyelashes, no eyebrows. She kept her hair very short so that she mm-hmm. could stop herself. And it was kind of gut wrenching to see. And I am a person with an anxiety disorder and OCD. And so I get it. Like, I have issues with picking, and I'm actually sitting here doing it right now, which is one of the reasons why I've got a pen in my hand and trying to fidget that way. But when you have those outward reflections of what's going on in here in your, you know, in your brain, it's really hard. You can, everyone else can see it, and you feel embarrassed by it, but you can't stop it because to quote our very good friend, Francesca Zappia, there's a monster in my brain that controls my doubt. And I really liked how you included her having this disorder because it was a part of her and people loved her. And I don't want to give too much away, but there's a part where somebody says, I want all of you. I want to see all of you, not just the parts you want to show me. And like, that for me was like a point that I felt just deeply connected, because that's that's the kind of relationship you want when you're a person that has a mental illness. You want someone to say, I see that, and that's okay, and I'm accepting of that. And I know that that's not the central theme of this story, but it just, that resonated with me.
Same. Yeah. It's very, it's hard when we present outward something that we've been internally battling with.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Tisha really balances that well in here. I mean, she doesn't balance it well. Obviously, she doesn't fucking balance it well because she's literally picking herself to death. But she handles it as best as she can. She still persists on. She's still, she is a strong woman.
And you know what? She's still a really good mom.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times when women are portrayed in books and in any type of media as having a mental illness, they neglect everything else. And Tisha doesn't do that.
Children.
She is such a good mom. And
yeah. Thanks for that, by the way. As mom, I appreciate that.
I mean, that just really resonated with me. So I thank you for that.
You know, and I think that in the past, like we read these stories about people in particular in the past, right? Books said in the past, and like everyone is whole. Everyone is beautiful. Everyone is like unbothered. And I mean, I think that works in historical romance. I don't necessarily want the leading man to have like his teeth rotted out.
Or boiled.
But, right.
But
that's not what I'm writing. I want to write about, I want something that's a little bit more real. And it's something
realistic
that,
fiction. Yeah. You know,
even though we didn't, like you said, they didn't call trichotillomania that in this era, it still existed.
Right.
PTSD still existed. And
right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Just so. Because we didn't have a name for it didn't mean it wasn't there.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Looking at you, doctors that gave me ADHD because only boys have ADHD. Circa 1993. Anyways, let's move on to the next question.
Yeah.
In your author's note, you say one of the reasons you decided on a medical traveling show was the Pure Food Act and Drug Act of 1906. As the local ADHD fat goblin, I got to hear how this invisible thread led these two together.
Yes, sure. You know, I'll say I've always had this sort of interest in traveling medicine shows. I think they're this quintessential part of Americana, but I knew like nothing about them. They just sort of are there in the consciousness.
We just know about it.
Did they really exist? And so I wanted to know all about that. But in particular, the Pure Food and Drug Act was, you know, I think we think about it when we think about this act from 1906, we think about it in relation to the jungle, Upton Sinclair's book, right? Mm-hmm. But it was also a response to these traveling medicine shows and this just patent medicine craze. Mm-hmm. You know, people were putting all kinds of things in these medicines and they could just claim whatever they wanted. They could claim it cured everything. And there would be, you know, sometimes like really banal things in there, like bathwater or whatever, sugar. But sometimes, you know, heroin and morphine and mercury, arsenic, like toxic things. And people
remember
were
kids, Coca-Cola used to have cocaine in it.
Yes,
sure did.
Yes, and it was, it was kind of meant as this as a patent medicine initially. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. so the food, the Pure Food and Drug Act is sort of this response to that mm-hmm. and helps tamp down on that. And it's really, I would say, like the first nail in the coffin of these traveling medicine shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But my story, you know, takes place before that, when it is this wild west of mm-hmm. patent medicines and you can claim whatever you want. And I was just sort of interested in this, I don't know, like this tension between these snake oil salesmen who were mm-hmm. sometimes putting toxic things in their remedies and marketing them, schlepping them in a way that was mm-hmm. that they knew, right, was outside of the scope of what this did.
Absolutely.
At the same time, these towns, these small towns, welcomed these shows. Yeah. They were, mm-hmm. by and large, so excited that
because someone they have, was coming. They have a doctor. And they probably haven't seen a doctor in their town in years.
And it's not just the doctor side of it. There's entertainment value, too.
Yes.
And you know what? I don't think... So, as we're having this conversation, when I was reading this, I was going, I don't think I knew that medicine shows were a thing. And then I started remembering, well, they're definitely a thing in Sweeney Todd. And then I'm like, but Sweeney Todd is, you know, that's a play. It's fiction. I mean, it's based on stuff, but like it's fiction. But as we're having this conversation, I'm going, oh yeah, I did know that was a thing. Like, it just, to me, when I think of like traveling entertainment, that's not what my brain goes to. I think of
circus.
Circuses.
Hardin and Bailey.
Well, yes. even beyond that, just like the small little traveling circus type things, the little tropes. But I thought this was an interesting way to look at it because they really were cleaning up. They were making bank off of people.
And Huey really
selling them nothing.
Huey really knew how to fudge the system. Mm-hmm. He knew he just needed a doctor in name. And that was it. And that's crap, man. Like he.
Yeah.
And they were really good at that. These snake oil salesmen, they knew what they were doing in that way, right? They would, mm-hmm. they would prey on people who were, you know, who were desperate, who were gullible. Mm-hmm. They would use these, you know, these hard sell tactics.
Yeah.
We'll see today when people are marketing things.
This will lead great.
It's 100% still happening today because you cannot. I mean, it's. I feel like it's MLMs. Gotten better now.
MLMs and those MLMs
and people sliding in your to your DM. People like sliding into your DMs about their MLM.
Hey girl,
long time no see. I've got this new great weight loss drug.
Bitch, you and tried to push me down the fucking bleachers in eighth grade. Go away.
Right. You know why it's been a long time no see? Because I don't like you. Maybe just don't talk to me. But yeah, like, I mean, that's still happening, right? We're promising all these things. Like, every time I'm playing a game on my phone, I constantly am getting, like, an ad for keto gummies. And it's not that, like, they don't work, but, like, they don't work and stay working. Right? And so,
all the diet pills we were fed between 90s and now. Like, it's just...
Yes.
So this actually is great.
Those were caffeine.
This is a great conversation to lead into our next question. Snake oil and the other medicines they sold were pretty useless. Tusha notices right away, and they really have no health benefits. She says something to Huey, and he doesn't care. Huey's not just a con man extraordinaire, but I would say an all-around bastard of a man. Was it the opium, or was he just a trash human being? Thoughts, ladies?
I mean, I don't know that it was my personal opinion as a reader. I'm not the writer, of course, but as a reader, I don't think it was the opium because we get a backstory that he was like this before he even started. I think he was
strung out in jail, though. Like, he's probably always been addicted to opium. I'm guessing. I'm assuming.
I don't know if he had the money to be an opioid addict. I don't know. That's
by the way.
That's my take on it.
The opium epidemic back then was really bad, and people don't think about it.
That's true. It was quite extreme. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, first of all, I think that, you know, like, as you're writing the book, mm-hmm. the book mm-hmm. sort of belongs to the author. But once you're published, the book, it belongs to the reader, and your mm-hmm. interpretation is just as valid as my interpretation. But I happen to be in agreement with you. I think that Huey is trash.
He's such a trash human being.
Yeah, I don't think that it's entirely the opium. That certainly doesn't help, right? Mm-hmm. But
she's so a paddock and an asshole.
Right, right. And I mentioned that, you know, I had found that memoir by Violet McNeil. So she gets into this whole medicine show world because this man, she's from this like farm town, and she comes to the big city, I think like Minneapolis around the turn of the century. And this man just preys on her. He gets her, like, he willingly gets her addicted to drugs by like offering her a sales job. And then he like abuses her and just, but also like makes, you know, like in this, makes her love him and all these so terrible things. He's so gross. And he's gross. The person that I modeled Huey after. So I think, you know.
Yeah. That math maths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That I want characters with texture, but, and, you know, different shades of their personality. But I think there are people that are, I mean.
But we still have these kind of people. Very trash things. Yeah. We have these kind of people still today. You're always going to see these kind of people. The Hueys of the world are always going to try to take advantage of people in the system as best as they can.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm going to leave that. Since we are on the topic of the show, I want to talk about this crew. We have the Trout family. Cal, who's a spectacular musician. Fanny, a giant of a woman, but dances like an angel. Their young son, Al. Lawrence, the native with the heart of a poet. And we have Daryl. I kept calling him Daryl. I kept adding a Y in my brain. Sorry, grew up redneck. Daryl, a silent, tall, fix-it man who's kind of got a few secrets. Huey's using all of them and has secrets against all of them. You tell their story slowly throughout the book so the readers get to know them with Tusha. Did anyone or any story in history help inspiring this traveling group?
I would say there's no like one particular person or story that inspired these characters, but I was drawing from my research about the shows. Mm-hmm. We had talked about the circus just a few minutes ago. Like there was a lot of overlap between these performers, people who performed the circus, who would go do a Wild West show, come and maybe travel with a traveling medicine show for a while. Like, Harry Houdini, for example, he got his start in a traveling medicine show. So like there are these people, you know, that did this and then went on to do other types of entertainment. So I kind of had a sense of like, okay, what would be plausible for these who would be in these shows? And then I was really interested in this idea of like kind of that more than meets the eye idea that, you know, we make very snap judgments about people and part of that's by necessity, but you see people, especially people that don't fit the mold, right? Yeah. That kind of stand out in society. And we just make all these judgments about them. And I really wanted to have characters that sort of flipped that and showed the reader, like there's so much more beneath each one of these characters beyond just their musical ability or their, you know, their physicality. Their humanness, right?
And that's so, part of their stories is making sure you realize that they're still people.
Yeah.
They're not just a sideshow act.
So I used to teach in Apollo Beach, Florida. And that is where the carnies, they are fine with being called that. That is where carnies would vacation in the off season. And the community of Apollo Beach is still made up of many families that were part of traveling sideshows and circuses from the turn of the century, which I guess we can't really say turn of the century anymore now that we're the 1900s. it's still turn of the century to me, but anyway.
It's still 1999. What are you talking about?
Listen, my kids tell me I'm from the late 1900s now, and I just am like,
you tell them, gross. Boys, if they say that to Aunt Molly, they're gonna have a long they're gonna hear an earful.
It's fine. It's fine, whatever, I'm not bitter. I only birthed them. But yeah, that, so I there's a lot of history in that community, and there's a lot of like nostalgia of these traveling circuses. And one of my students, her family, like that was their heritage. And so she brought in and shared with us all these photos of her family, like doing this. And it's just really neat to see that history. And I think I don't know if this was just me because I was trying to picture this on a scale larger than what it was, but you know how like I'm going to use the show, is it Adams Elementary? The show that's Abbott? On now? Abbott Elementary. Okay. Abbott. You know how there's like five or six teachers that are like the main crew, but there's like more in the school.
We just don't see them.
I kept picturing that there were more people that were part of this than just like the characters that we had wrapped up in. And I know that's not necessarily what you intended, but it's where my brain went. Cause I was like, well, who else is going to set up the tents? And then I had to be like, okay, this is not a circus, April. I had to like rein myself in. Cause I was like, it's not like the key cast. And then the side characters, like, this is the whole
thing. I'm trying to make this a show. It's not a show. It's not a show.
I know my brain was not doing it.
My brain does that too.
but I just feel like there, even if you wanted to, there was room that you could have brought in these other characters. What you chose to focus on, I feel like, was really good, like, source of what happened. And the reason I brought up Apollo Beach is because I'll have to have Molly link it below in the comments, but I think it was the bearded woman married the like tallest man. And they retired together in Apollo Beach, Florida.
I remember this.
And it reminded me of this family, of the giantess and Cal. Like, that's what it reminded me of.
I grew up where Barnum and Bailey used to practice and stay for the summers when I was little. Like, from, like, age 2 to 7, we lived down there in Florida in that area. My dad, my birth father, is, like, really good friends with a clown named Damtrax. So, like... Yeah, that was the clown.
That's scene. Worse than fingers. That's worse than fingers.
How did I not use that on the episode? Anyways.
I don't know what the point was. We're going to move on. Tusha has to be careful about how she shares her son with the world. Toby is a special boy. Today, he would be diagnosed with Down syndrome.
Well, she does reference Dr. Downs
right
in the book.
Right. But back in Tusha's time, children that survived with Downs were sent to asylums. I'm sure this research was not pleasant for many reasons. Mm. Toby gains a special friend and a little monkey, and he becomes the reason for a lot of worry in this book. Tusha will do almost anything to keep her son safe. Adding this extra hurdle for our main character changes the story. Why add this layer?
You know, this was another thing that was both, I think, like, practical in terms of the structure of the story, but also personal. So, again, I'm trying to figure out what is going to drive someone to make essentially, like, this bargain with the devil that she makes with Huey, right?
Right.
And I think that she might not have done it just for herself, but she would absolutely do it as a mother.
That's exactly where my brain went. When I was like writing this question, I was like, there is no way to write this without this element of urgency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Like, I just, that, so that right away, as I was reframing the story, because in the original story, she was not a mom. This new story, she just immediately was. And then I kind of went down this tangential rabbit hole, as you do when you're doing research.
Yeah.
Been there. This idea.
Ask me about bootlegging in Vermont sometime.
I love it. That's part of the fun, right? That's part of the fun of research.
Right. But no. Don't ask April. She's upset about me in that book. Moving on.
So my brother-in-law has Down syndrome, and he is, he's just the most amazing human being I've ever met. He's so kind, he's so intuitive and empathetic and just an absolute joy to be around.
Most people I know with Downs are very pure humans and they have no malice in them. Mm-hmm. You know?
They're just such a very, very special group of people. And I think that's sort of what led me to this question of like, well, what would it be like as a mom in the 1800s to kind of
be difficult
to know that was the expectation that you had a baby like this.
Thank God she had the medical knowledge to understand the needs.
Yeah. Yeah, and to know, like, he didn't have to go to an institution. And also, I think, to have the understanding that that wasn't the best place for him, because yeah. that was very much how it was sold. I mean, all the mm-hmm. way up through, I don't know, the 1950s, really, that's what they would tell parents. Like, your child will be better off in this place.
And because mm-hmm. you're not equipped to handle this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And well, I think I'm not saying that this is everybody, but I think at that time there was an embarrassment of there was still a belief that you did something wrong to cause this, because we didn't really understand Down syndrome in particular is it's an issue in your chromosomes. So yeah. it's not something that you did. It's not something that happened during delivery. This happened in the very basis, the core of the
beginning of
DNA of this building. Child.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, I think being that, you know, parents still thought, and we actually mm-hmm. see that in Addison Armstrong's first book, Lyda Luna Park, like mm-hmm. this baby isn't strong enough. It won't survive. You should just give up on this baby. And it, you know, I think, I don't want to give away too much of Tusha's story, because I really want people to read your book.
Me too.
I really do. We give spoilers most episodes. We don't when we host an author, and I want people to pick this up. So I don't want to give it all away, but there is so much that she overcomes that a lot of women would have walked away.
Yes.
A lot of women would have walked away, and I don't think that we would have judged them. Mm-mm. I think that a lot of people would have been like, you know what? You did the right thing.
Yeah.
For her to fight it all the way tooth and nail, and to be the kind of mom she is, to know that her options right now are the poorhouse and her son being institutionalized, or going to join this medicine show that's mm-hmm. against everything that she believes in, but she gets to keep him. Mm-hmm. That's the decision that the mom has to make, right? That's the decision that we have to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, my oldest son is autistic, and not that we would ever have thought about just, you know, casting to the side. No. We wouldn't. But we pushed and pushed and pushed to get a diagnosis, because we knew there was something that was not neurotypical. And it mm-hmm. took 7 years to get his diagnosis. But we never gave up. And he's 11 now. He's a straight A student. The kid's freaking brilliant. I mean, he's twice exceptional. So he's gifted and autistic. And we're constantly fighting still, because that's what you do. You signed up for it when you became a parent. Tusha didn't necessarily sign up for everything that she was getting, but she fought for her son.
Sometimes you got to take what's put in your hands and work with it.
Yeah.
And you know what? I do it all the time with
my she was pretty much alone.
Yeah.
And to go and join this and find the cast of characters, the family that she ended up making there, like, that's where she was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. She might not have agreed with it, like, as far as, like, her personal beliefs, but that's where she needed to be, because those mm-hmm. were her people. Sometimes you just got to find your tribe.
And, you know, sometimes your tribe comes in weird ways.
Yeah, Molly's weird.
All of my friends that are introverts, I just literally told them we're friends now.
That's what happened. That she said, "Hey, you like books? I like books. We'll be friends." I was like, "Okay, weird girl."
We're friends. And then we talked about Hunger Games and Twilight the whole night. So less weird. My other near and dearest, closest friend, Hillary, I invited her and her kids over for a play date, and she sat on the floor and played with my dogs, and I go, "You and I are going to be friends." And she goes, "Okay," and goes back to petting my dogs. That's literally how we collect people.
Every one of my friends are extroverts who collected me. I don't have any introvert friends. They're all extroverts that claimed me. And I'm like, okay.
Trading cards. All of you. I love it. So I want to move on to something a little bit more, since we're on the heavy. I mean, this book is pretty heavy.
It has heavy moments, but it also has humor.
I know. It does have humor. I'm just giving Amanda a hard time.
And lightness.
Out of all the stories from the show, Lawrence hits me the hardest. Since the effects of the Indian Removal Act / the Trail of Tears isn't something we see in fiction a lot,
or we don't think about when we read fiction in this era. Sorry. I was like, what are you saying, Molly? So we don't see the Trail of Tears spoken about in fiction, especially when it's fiction of this era. It's not something we discuss or talk about. Since this is set mostly in the West, did it feel like you had to include this when you started writing?
So actually this, the Lawrence, his character, kind of came from a sort of a different place in that. So Indian medicine shows, like you'd have different types of shows, right?
Right.
These traveling medicine shows that used a different like shtick. Sometimes right. they would pretend to be a Quaker or sometimes like a traveling foreign prince. But a big right. thing were these shows.
Russian czars, whatever it is, yes, right?
Yeah. But the big thing were these Indian medicine shows, they called them. And they would pretend that they were an Indian scout, or that they had
what did they call
him? Yes, all these things, right?
Yeah.
And that they were selling this very special remedy known only to the Native Americans. And like the show, the Kickapoo Indian medicine show that appears in the book, like that was a real traveling show, maybe the biggest at sort of in their heyday. I think they had like 100 different troops
that were
traveling the United States and Canada. Yeah. So they were just huge moneymakers because people had this fascination for Native American culture, even as they're like preying upon them. Right.
Right.
So in that, and that was something these shows did that I didn't want to shy away from. It's a tough thing, I think, to write about these things that are doing terrible things, appropriating other cultures. Mm-hmm. And the appropriation of Native American beliefs was a huge part of this.
Yeah.
I feel like if I were alive at this time and saw one of those, that would be the thing that roped me in. I would be certain that people who lived on a land for that significant amount of time without medicine would know how to care for themselves. So I think they would have gotten me 100%. Because, I mean, you think about the Chinese remedies and things like that.
Yeah.
That so many people.
The herbs and.
Yeah.
The unicorn hairs and everything people think that are like.
I'm not saying that none of it works. I don't want to say that none of it works, because I think acupuncture is like incredible,
right.
but I'm just saying, like, I think they would have gotten me with that, because I'd have been like, they know the land. They know
I'm not here to dull your bliss. I just want you guys to know it's not always medicine.
It's fair.
You know, like, what got me about Lawrence the most is I grew up in the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York, and in New York State, when you go to history class, learning about the Native history is a huge part of it. And my family, my grandfather always told us that we were Iroquois. We're Iroquois. By the way, my 23andMe says I am not Native. So.
When did you do? Not we relevant. Did,
not quite. So I've always, like, in my mind, my family's always, we're Native. So, like, when I see these stories are not told, and when they do get told, it feels like there's a bit of redemption sometimes because these stories were silenced for so long, and we're still seeing the silence of Natives today, you know, of the schools in Canada and what is going on, you know, across the country.
And here.
Right. Like Wyoming and the drilling in North Dakota's, like, and how we're constantly just consuming land that is not ours. And it just, it hits me hard, and I appreciate it. I need you to hear that. I appreciate it, because I'm sure it was difficult. Moving on, because I went a little too hard. Because I do that. Galveston and hurricanes are very familiar to us here at Book Besties. I have always been fascinated by the history of Old Galveston and how long it has been a city. Was there any interesting facts that you learned you wish you could have snuck into the book that didn't fit?
Yeah. You know, it's just you mentioning like how prominent of a city it was.
It was amazing.
Just because of the way where Tusha is, the troop is, like, they're not really necessarily experiencing that part of Galveston, but it was, it was like the fourth biggest at the time of the hurricane, right? So 1900. Yeah.
It was
the biggest hurricane. Yeah, the first big hurricane. The fourth biggest city in all of Texas. Mm-hmm. It was the third wealthiest city in the United States, like per capita. They called the Strand, their kind of downtown area, the Wall Street of the South. So like, yep. just, mm-hmm. I think that prominence,
there's
that
signs really still that say that.
Yes. So that really, that was something that surprised me as I was researching, but didn't like, again, there wasn't really, that wasn't the Galveston sister that Tusha was interacting with. Mm-hmm. During
did
the
you
book
head down course. There when you were doing this research?
I did. That was such a neat, I always try to go to the places that I write about because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not from, it's probably clear listening to me speak, I'm not from Texas.
No, you don't say.
but
neither are we. You know, well, actually I am, but.
I mean, I lived in Texas for 12 years. That makes me part Texas, wow. I assume.
I was born there. So by Texans, Texans will tell you I'm from Texas.
I birthed two children there. I'm Texan by proxy, I guess.
Yeah. You both definitely have more claim to Texas than I do. So that's something I really wanted. You know, I wanted twofold. One, mm-hmm. I wanted to go and research at the archives there, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a library that has a great archive about the storm. Yeah. And from there, I was able to.
The library down there is really cool.
It's beautiful. Oh, my gosh. The library is so beautiful. I love it. And I was able to find something that led me to another archive at the medical college.
Yeah.
And that mm-hmm. really helped me get some of the more like niche research I was trying to do, but also like little things. When I wrote the first draft of the story, I described the water around at the Gulf side of the island or the water all around the island as like this bluish color, this blue green.
No. No.
Right. So no. then I go there and I'm like, no. this water isn't blue.
No. Do you know when
that's brown.
That's brown. And you know when it does turn blue, like there's these drafts that bring in the pretty water. Everybody and their brother posts the pictures, like when the first snow hits, you know, in a certain
yeah, yeah. Although and I'm like, not, I'm not totally sure that it's always been like that. It's more brown now, I think, because of all the drilling. Because
we're drilling
in the Gulf.
But
yeah. I don't think it was ever blue, like clear water blue.
No. But it is funny to see it when it is blue, like mm-hmm. everybody from North Houston, like Woodlands and down will go down to the water. It is ass to elbows trying to get mm-hmm. to that fucking water because everybody's like, we got to see it before it goes away.
Well, you know, what I found to be interesting, I never even thought about it being that populated in Galveston because how would people get there? Like, how would people get there?
It's and a so really long journey from Houston on
well,
horse.
No, but I mean, you need a bridge.
They built one.
They did.
Molly, I know. What I'm saying is I hadn't thought about it until I read that in the book. Then I was like, oh, they had a bridge then. Because the bridge that we drove across was not the bridge that they had then.
I used to think about that when we drive that bridge, right? Because the bridge from mainland to Galveston is really long, right? And they mm-hmm. keep rebuilding it to make it more storm safe and more storm mm-hmm. safe, right?
And wider to help with wider, the traffic.
Yeah. And I, you know, I've thought about that a few times, like how long that would take back in the day from just like, we lived in League City. So League City is like the halfway point between Houston and Galveston. Mm-hmm. And I like, it's like 30 minutes from my home in League City to the beach in Galveston. So I bet that'd be a day's travel.
It was just definitely more than 30 minutes. She's wrong.
You know what? April, you mind your business.
Traffic sucks in that area. Well,
Houston's 20 minutes from Houston is the joke in Houston.
Houston is 20 minutes from Houston. I feel like I didn't get to see Galveston and really enjoy Galveston. I never even went to the library there, which like
you don't
for
do
me,
outdoors.
That's Molly, I visit libraries.
That's true.
But the places where I've been in Galveston was like that time that we took the girls trip down there and we were there for like the day. They have
I wasn't invited to that. That was when Jessica had me on the outs.
You didn't go with us?
No, that was when Jessica kicked me.
Not relevant. Sorry, I felt like you were invited to it. I'm sorry. I don't know. I didn't plan it. I just got
No, babe, I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying I remember. I just wasn't invited because Jessica was butthurt at me still.
Yeah, well, she's a bitch. Anyway.
Long story. We'll fill you in later, Amanda.
So, I went to, they have a Christmas Carol thing they do.
Yes, the Dickinson on the Strand.
Yeah, Dickens on the Strand. I went to that, and then I was at the Coast Guard base. Like, that's the only places I've been in Galveston. I saw a cruise ship, but I never actually saw the water. Like, I never went to the beach in Galveston.
You guys live so close. You were a little busy. You were kind of schooling.
And I was in grad school. I was having a baby. Kind of,
yeah, you were a little busy. Since we're on Galveston, let's talk about the hurricane. You know, keep it in our hour structure-ish. Hurricanes, I have worked several and seen the damage. Like I said, we're not strangers to them in Epoch Besties.
No.
I, too, have read The Storm of the Century by Al Roker. That's a long story. The horror of the hurricane fascinates me and terrifies me at the same time. What inspired you to bring this real-life story into your fascinating book?
Yeah, you know, so I mentioned I'm not from Texas. I didn't even, I'll be honest, so before I even learned about the storm, I don't even think I could have told you that Galveston was an island. Like, you could have put a map in front of me, I wouldn't have been able to point to it.
Well, that's because Stephanie Meyer makes it seem like you can just walk from it.
Right.
If you're a Twilight fan, you know.
That's true.
We'll get back to Twilight at the end of the episode. I promise you, Amanda.
Fair.
So, yeah, I've lived in landlocked states my whole life, so I've never experienced a hurricane. But I was scrolling through the internet sometime a few years back, and I came across a list, you know, the lists that are always up. And this one was like the 10 deadliest natural disasters in U.S. history. And I saw the hurricane, and I was like, what is this? And it just it just led me down this rabbit hole. And I was just, I was so struck by the devastation.
The writer's research rabbit hole is like ridiculous. You come out of it and you're like, what day is it? Like, did I feed my kids? Like,
How long have I been down there? And so the devastation and the aftermath too. I think both you had this show of community coming together and the rebuilding, but you also had this fracturing of kind of like existing cracks, like the racism and the prejudice also was exacerbated by the storm. And I think, you know, today we are seeing more frequent and more deadly storms, natural disasters, not just storms. And I think there's something to be learned from that, something to be learned from
what happened. I mean, there were people that lived on that, were born and raised on that island way before like anything had happened, and they just abandoned Galveston after that storm. Family money, family properties just left. And as someone that worked a lot of hurricanes and I've seen a lot of damage, I saw Katrina. I saw bits of Katrina. You are never prepared. It doesn't matter if it's the 1900s or if it's 2024. There's no machines that the government runs. There is not, we are not planning these. This is just nature being nature, friends.
Yeah. And at this time period, 1900.
They had no warnings.
And again, how do you get off the island? Like, they had a bridge. But they don't have an alert system. Like, one of the characters is like, well, we hung the flag. It's like, there's just one though, like we just put up one flag and everybody's supposed to know,
right? And what about our tourists? What about, like, there is just there's so many levels. And one of the ghost tours in Galveston, I actually haven't taken it, but I will put a link in the things if you guys ever want to go, any of the besties want to go to it. They actually talk about the hurricane and some of the people that were trapped and like the hotels and stuff. It is fascinating.
And now they haunt the island.
And now they fucking haunt the island.
I don't believe in ghosts. We talked about
this. Talked about this. We've already talked about Tusha being in Galveston. We here at the Book Besties love to call historical fiction Women Walking Away. The Medicine Woman is your fifth book.
Yeah.
I would love how you got into writing historical fiction.
So I love history. I've always loved history. Even when I was, you know, a real little kid, I loved imagining what it would have been like to live in another era. Another time. Yeah. So, but I find historical fiction to be much more interesting and accessible than
digestible.
Than your straight nonfiction. I'm not so interested in like the date that such and such a battle took place or the general that was in charge. I want to know about the effects that these events had on the everyday
person.
People's lives, right? Yeah. Especially because so often I think in the historical narrative, women's voices and their experiences, they were minimized and trivialized and just obscured or omitted completely.
Yeah.
And so I like to sort of try to dredge that up when I'm sharing history through fiction, right?
Right.
At the end of the day, I love fiction. I love a good story.
How many books have you written, Amanda?
5.
That's awesome.
I know. Not jealous at all.
I've written 0 books, but I've read a lot.
I've written 1 full novel and several 3/4, 2/4, 3/4 novels. And I'm getting there.
Yes, absolutely. That is its own huge.
Look at her face. She might as well ring the bell at me. No, I'm not. No, she's not.
Molly wrote the first 2 or 3 chapters of a really good romance novel. And I was like, fucking hell, I cannot wait to read the rest of this. Ooh. And she's never written another word in it.
Oh, no!
The ADHD is strong. I'm currently working on, my current novel is, it's about a country singer named River Rhodes. And he's dealing with a mental health crisis at the same time his father suddenly dies.
Oh. Girl, I didn't even know about this one.
I've been keeping it quiet because I'm actually really far in it and I don't want to tell anybody because I feel like the more I talk about it, the more it goes away.
Okay, well, you just told all of our listeners. So.
No, I didn't. Nobody, everybody, raise your hands. I didn't hear shit. Thank you. Thank you.
It's like the Maggie Banks.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly what came to mind. Speaking of,
if you listened to our episode from last week, that's what we're talking about.
Speaking of Maggie Banks, I picked my book. I will do The Crucible, and I will be adding magic to it. So when you start that series at your library, I will be coming, and I will do The Crucible.
I love that you've just decided I'm starting this series at my
library.
You and
I had this conversation.
I've never said I'm doing
it. You're absolutely doing it.
Last week, we covered the banned bookshop of Maggie Banks, and they have authors do retellings of classics in different genres. So they have a romance that's Hunting for Dick. It's Moby Dick. They have a sci-fi. And then what was the last one? Was she a thriller?
The sci-fi author did Great Gatsby.
Yes. And it was
and
an alien.
What was the book the mystery writer did?
I don't know, but like everybody died.
Everybody died.
Not how that book goes. Like everybody died.
Was
it Pride and Prejudice?
Yeah, it was Pride and Prejudice.
And then everybody dies.
So we've been talking about how she's going to do this at her library.
No, Molly decided I was going to do this at my library.
She's going to do this at her library. And I'm going to come and I'm going to do The Crucible, but I'm going to add magic.
Magic.
So, okay, now that you have this idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're a historical fiction girl. Get it on your brain. Okay.
We'll have you come to my library. And I live in coastal Virginia, so figure out a way to get here because my library budget will not cover it.
Book Besties can't either. We're hashtag not sponsored.
Not sponsored.
Editing is a process we all loathe as authors. We cut away bits of our heart when we do it. Was there anything that broke your heart to take out of Galveston?
As I mentioned, there was a whole entire first draft.
Yeah. I remember going draft 1, draft 2. I've been there, baby.
Yeah, that was painful period. But there was a character, that story is actually told from 2 characters, 2 Shadowless characters, Samuel. And parts of Samuel became Darl, but not the full character. And I don't know if other authors like sometimes fall in love with their characters, but I totally fell in love with Samuel. And it was really, I hated to give him up.
Well, so, I mean, will you take that draft and try to turn it into a different story? No.
Was there something you left it? Able to say?
I don't think so.
You saved what you could from it, huh?
Yes. Yeah. Like, I can't write two books about medicine shows. So.
No, but I mean, like, could you take Samuel and he's so.
Maybe. Yeah, he might.
Well, put Samuel in the circus since we keep talking about it so much. Are you a pantser or a plotter?
I'm a plotter. Definitely a plotter.
Could tell.
Can you? Okay, so this is our last question.
Molly's a pantser.
I am indeed a pantser.
She's trying to make herself a plotter.
It's hard when you have the ADHD.
Yeah, I don't think there's a right way to do it. If you're a pantser, be a pantser.
That's what I said.
I keep notebooks. Don't listen to me. So, like, I keep track of stuff as I'm going, right? And, like, yeah. I have, like, I draw, like, that's, like, a floor plan for a house. You just can't see because it's pencil. Like, so I just do it as I go. It's just not structured well.
That's what I tell her. She doesn't listen to me. It's like,
I don't listen to myself.
What the fuck do I know? I'm only her best friend and a librarian, but you know.
And I have a master's degree in this stuff. It's fine. Can you tell us what you have coming up next? Anything you want to promote?
So I'm currently working on a book. It's based on a true story about an abortion clinic that was raided by the police in 1940. Oh. But it had operated as this like open secret in the heart of downtown Chicago for a decade. Mm-hmm. And so it's about that police raid and also this like very bloody and sensationalized trial that happened afterward, as seen through the eyes of a nurse who works at the clinic.
Oh, cool.
Wow.
And is that picked up already? Like, is it under contract or? Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be, it's under contract with my current publisher and it's due.
That's wonderful. In 1 month.
It's due in a month.
Pressure.
No pressure.
Yeah. No pressure. You're just spending your free time with us.
You got this. It's cool. It's fine. Listen, if you want to, you know, share that with us and come back after it's published, you're more always than welcome
back. You're an honorary book bestie.
We
now,
love
Amanda.
Collecting friends and authors and just, you know.
Yeah.
We like promoting you all because, you know, I mean, it's. We love books. That's why we started this. Well, we also started it because Molly had a dream and I was like bored. So I was like, sure, let's do that. But you know, we love books. So being able to meet authors and like promote their stuff, it's really awesome. We love it.
Yeah. Thank you. We love it because we're you, you know, we see the passion, we see the love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So April, you got to hit her with the question now.
All right. Here we go. This has been an ongoing question on Book Bessie since season one. Do vampires have sperm?
Circa Twilight, specifically.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's okay to just ask in general.
Okay.
Because Allie Hazelwood's bride, she specifically gives a medical reason that they have children.
He like writes it in. It's like science the shit out of it. She did a good job.
Do vampires have sperm?
Yeah, so my feeling of like the Twilight vampires, I feel like they would not. Just in the way that they're sort of that I don't
they're
know.
They're dead and frozen and cold. Yeah.
But like, have you guys read any of J.R. Ward? Is that who? Like
I haven't. Lover.
Oh my god, it's so good. I love her mind. Not love her mind. What is her first book? I don't know. I'll put it in the. I'll send it to you guys. Anyways, her vampires I could totally see having sperm.
Warm-blooded. Oh, yes. J.R. Ward. Yes.
Listen, I just feel like the way that Stephanie Meyer has written Edward and the other vampires, they're just like always erect because they're stone. So they're just walking around with erections with no sperm because
tucked
they're
that
dead
band, that belt
and sperm
loop, right?
Is alive.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel, I agree. I
as Emma Barry said, he just had one in the chamber.
That's what Emma Barry said, that he had one in the chamber. That
left over.
It was just there.
It was just there from like he was nearly dying of the Spanish flu.
He's 90 something years old, but he still had one left.
And he was, you know, and as he's dying and Carlisle's, you know, biting him, he just, you know, and you know,
no. You know, that's something too because the sperm die very quickly, like an egg. I could believe that. Eggs. Yeah. We have our eggs from when we're like
our mother helps create our eggs.
Yeah.
Right. But like the sperm, I'm thinking that.
No, isn't it like every 3 days they die?
Yeah. It's very
then
short.
How the hell? Listen, I went through fertility treatment for my kid, so I know how long sperm lives because they tell you that kind of stuff. And then they look inside you and they're like, oh, you have spermies that are up there that are still swimming, so you could get pregnant. And you're like, maybe don't look at my vagina and talk about sperm. Like, this is uncomfortable.
And thank you for joining us on Book Besties.
Oh my great. Gosh.
Because April's making her vagina look like a fucking cave. Anytime I see anybody do that, I think of Ace Ventura when he's trying to come out of the you know.
Oh my gosh, we've lost it.
This is why we don't film on Friday nights normally. we want to thank you for joining us, Amanda.
Thank you so much. It's
been so lovely. You are always welcome back. Please bring whatever books you want. We're here to help. And
yeah, I mean, I want to read, what was it called? The Undertaker's Assistant.
Yes, that was the one I Spooky Season.
Is it spooky? Is it like creepy? Spooky?
No.
Okay.
Damn it, Amanda.
You had one job, lady. Just lie.
She said, no.
We appreciate the honesty, but come on, lady.
I think of all my books, that is probably, you were talking about Galveston being kind of dark. That yeah. book is probably the darkest.
Heavy. Okay, cool. I love that. I am dark and twisty. My emo purple shade, purple and gray shades of heart. Whatever. I'm so tired.
Do you want to show what's going to be next week, April? Did you bring that or?
Oh, yeah. So next week. Well, sorry. Amanda, was there anything else you wanted to share with us?
Are you going to have any events coming up or anything?
Just that if anyone is interested, you know, go to my website. I have a newsletter where
I'll put it in the things, guys. You know that.
Yes. And Look at this cover. You can get the wagon right here. And
if you're part of our reading challenge,
because we're so cool, she signed it for us. Woo! I feel special.
But hey, if you're still part of our reading challenge and you haven't done Woman Walking Away,
you can use this book. All right. So next week, we are reading Cinderella is Dead mm-hmm. by Kaylin Bayron. And this is a YA book. It's got like dystopian, fairy tale selection retellings. Vibes? It's got selection vibes too, and it's sapphic. So, you know, we love a good queer book on this pod on the occasion. City. We love it. So, anyway, Cinderella's Dead is next week, and then we get into warm up with winter reads,
winter romance.
Warm up with a spicy book.
All right, besties, we appreciate your time.
Yes. Thank you again. Thank you so much, Amanda. We'd love to have you again.
Bye. Thank you for joining us on Book Besties with special guest Amanda Skinnendorf. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly and not those of anyone else. Today's book was The Medicine Woman of Galveston. Your book besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins. Editing by Thomas Watkins and music is Sleep Sweetly by Brigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit us at our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite look.